Hello, I'm Veronica Scarsbrick. Thanks for joining me. Remembrance Day marks the day when the British commemorate those who fought and indeed are still fighting in wars for their country. As we know, this commemoration falls each year in Britain on the 11th of November to mark the very day back in 1918 that World War I ended and the armistice was signed in Compiègne in northern France. I'd like to mark this date by sharing with you a programme presented by Jill Bevilacqua.
This book is not about heroes. English poetry is not yet fit to speak of them. Nor is it about deeds or lands or anything about glory, honour, might, majesty, dominion or power, except war. Above all, I am not concerned with poetry. My subject is war and the pity of war. The poetry is in the pity.
These lines from the preface to his poems were written by Wilfred Owen in great haste during a brief respite from life in the front line. Owen's intention was to strike at the conscience of England in regard to the continuance of war. Born on March the 18th, 1893, at Place Wilmot, Oswestry, Owen had begun writing poetry before the outbreak of war. But his major poems were all written during 1917 and 1918, poems since recognised as unrivalled in majesty and weight by any other war poetry of the time. Owen believed that the poet's duty was to be truthful, and in Dulce et Decorum Est he spared no gruesome detail in the hope of waking people out of their complacency. Television could not give a more graphic picture of the horrors of war.
Bent double, like old beggars under sacks, knock-kneed, coughing like hags, we cursed through sludge, till on the haunting flares we turned our backs, and towards our distant rest began to trudge. Men marched asleep. Many had lost their boots, but limped on, blood-shod. All went lame, all blind, drunk with fatigue, deaf even to the hoots of gas shells dropping softly behind. Gas, gas, quick boys, an ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time, but someone still was yelling out and stumbling and floundering like a man in fire or lime. Dim through the misty panes and thick green light, as under a green sea, I saw him drowning. In all my dreams before my helpless sight, he plunges at me, guttering, choking, drowning. If in some smothering dreams you too could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face, like a devil's sick of sin. If you could hear at every jolt the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, bitter as the cud of vile, incurable sores of innocent tongues, my friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory, the old lie, dulce et decorum est, pro patria mori.
When Owen was on leave in England, he carried in his pockets photographs of the wounded and mutilated to show to anyone who spoke to him of the glory of war. And as the war progressed, he came more and more to believe that participation in it was anti-Christian. In a letter written in hospital on the Somme, he described himself as a conscientious objector with a very seared conscience.
One of Christ's essential commands was passivity at any price. Suffer dishonour and disgrace, but never resort to arms. Be bullied, be outraged, be killed, but do not kill. Christ is literally in no man's land. There men often hear his voice. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for a friend.
In Futility, Owen laments the death of a young companion, one amongst so many cut off in the flower of their manhood, and asks the inevitable question, why?
Move him into the sun. Gently its touch awoke him once, at home, whispering of fields unsown. Always it woke him, even in France, until this morning and this snow. If anything might rouse him now, the kind old sun will know. Think how it wakes the seeds, woke once the clays of a cold star. Our limbs so dear achieved, our sides full nerved, still warm, too hard to stir. Was it for this the clay grew tall? Oh, what made fatuous sunbeams toil to break earth's sleep at all?
Even to his mother, Owen presented life in the trenches as it was, with no softening touches.
I can see no excuse for deceiving you. I've suffered seventh hell. I've not been at the front. I have been in front of it. I held an advanced post, that is, a dugout in the middle of no man's land. We had a march of 3 miles over shelled road, then nearly three along a flooded trench. After that, we came to where the trenches had been blown flat out and had to go over the top. It was, of course, dark, too dark, and the ground was not mud, not sloppy mud, but an octopus of sucking clay, 3, 4, and 5 feet deep, relieved only by craters full of water. Men have been known to drown in them. Many stuck in the mud and only got out by leaving their waders, equipment, and in some places their clothes. High explosives were dropping all around, and machine guns spluttered every few minutes. Those 50 hours were the agony of my happy life. Every 10 minutes on Sunday afternoon seemed an hour. I nearly broke down and let myself drown in the water that was now slowly rising over my knees. Toward 6 o'clock, when I suppose you would be going to church, the shelling grew less intense.
For men who fall on the battlefield, there are none of the gentle, civilized gestures of farewell. In many cases, there's not even a simple burial. Only the inhuman noises of war mark their passing. In his Anthem for Doomed Youth, Wilfred Owen sums up his grief for the loss of a whole generation.
What passing bells for these who die as cattle? Only the monstrous anger of the guns. Only the stuttering rifle's rapid rattle can patter out their hasty orisons. No mockeries for them from prayers or bells, nor any voice of mourning save the choirs, the shrill, demented choirs of wailing shells and bugles calling for them from sad shires. What candles may be held to speed them all? Not in the hands of boys, but in their eyes shall shine the holy glimmers of goodbyes. The pallor of girls' brows shall be their pall, their flowers the tenderness of silent minds, and each slow dusk a drawing down of blinds.
While they were both in a military hospital, Owen met the older poet, Siegfried Sassoon, whom he greatly admired and whose influence he admitted.
You have fixed my life,
however short. You did not light me. I was always a mad comet, but you have fixed me. I spun round you, a satellite, for a month, but I shall swing out soon, a dark star in the orbit, where you will blaze.
But in the last analysis, it was Owen who blazed. And on the last day of 1917, he wrote to his mother with conviction.
I go out of this year a poet, my dear mother, as which I did not enter it. I am held peer by the Georgians. I am a poet's poet. I am started. The tugs have left me. I feel the great swelling of the open sea taking my galleon.
To accompany the poems of Wilfred Owen, we've chosen some of the music of Sergei Rachmaninoff, the Russian pianist and composer born in 1873, who died in 1943 while the Second World War was still raging. What you're now hearing is probably the most familiar of his compositions, the Piano Concerto No. 2 in C minor, which was used in the wartime film Brief Encounter.
Many thanks to Jill Bevilacqua and to Sean Patrick Lovett there for producing this beautiful programme. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.